Welcome to Heroes Asylum, issue 30. Today, Heroes Asylum, we're going to be venturing into the sci-fi world. Welcome, inmates, to Heroes Asylum. That's right. We are here for the Dirty 30 issue. That's right.
Dirty 30, man. Dirty 30 time.
Yeah, that's right. So here, Kane and I are for the 30th time. This still blows my mind, 30 times that we've been doing this.
I didn't even think we'd get past five. Now we're at 30.
Well, if you count this in our midnight movie review, yeah, it's definitely quite a bit. So 30 issues so far. This one we're actually going to be talking about something that we really never touched a base with that much was sci-fi. Yeah, we've talked about Star Wars. We did have our Doctor Who issue a couple weeks ago. Thank you, Kane, for educating me on the good doctor.
Yes, sir.
We've never really talked that much about sci-fi, other sci-fi shows. And basically what we're going to do later after we get done with our admissions ward, we're going to go ahead and talk about the shows that we grew up with, that what influenced us other than the big ones we've already discussed, you know, Doctor Who, Star Wars, and Star Trek. We've talked about that a little bit. But other sci-fi shows that, you know, and influences that we've experienced and that brought us, you know, to this interest. So we're going to go ahead and do that, but we're also going to do the admissions ward. But I want to say hello to, of course, you know, Kane is here. So how are you doing today this weekend?
How you doing, sir? Pretty good. Had a good weekend. You know, I actually ventured out of the house.
Yes.
Saw some people. It was nice to get out of the house.
Yes, we did. We did see you up at the Mighty Mighty Benjamin show.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun being out again. I just had to take a little break, but I think everybody else will be seeing me a lot more at the Winchester. Oh. Every Saturday night, baby. That's every Saturday night, rock and roll, DJ get Benjamin.
Up. That's right. Go up and see the Mighty Benjamin. He'll he'll blow your mind.
So literally, will blow your mind. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's been a quiet week this week for news and like events. I mean, it's like this lull, this calm before the storm. I mean, I know we had the big rush at the beginning of the summer, you know, the mad summer movie rush, and then we've just kind of slowed down. Everything's been quiet. We do have Disney or D23 coming up at the end of this month, and then we got the fall releases coming up. So yeah, so it's been a quiet time. Actually, it's been kind of good because I've actually been able to catch up on a lot of my reads, which I'm happy about.
It's kind of like the dead crawl time. That's basically where you recharge, get ready for the fall. The leaves are changing. It's going to get cooler weather, hopefully, down here instead of the hot weather that we're always having. But definitely catch it up on some reads myself. Still trying to finish that Swamp Thing and good stuff. But got to reload and recharge and get ready. So
very good. So, well, what we're going to cover now, we're going to go ahead and hit the admissions ward, and we're going to actually talk about stuff that's coming down the road, something that, you know, some of the things that are coming out this fall. So here we go for the admissions ward.
News from the admissions ward.
All right, Kane. So what do you have today, sir?
Well, sir, guess what just dropped this week? The first trailer for season 2 of the Titans dropped. If you didn't get a chance to check it out, it showed basically just blew its wad, you know, no pun intended, in the trailer. Showed you everything, the new members of the Titans, from Aqualad. Hawk and Dove have some new outfits coming out this year. What else did we get? We got Starfire. Looks like a little bit of an upgrade in the costume. We got Raven, or actually the diamond in the head. Got our first look at Deathstroke, which is actually pretty cool. We saw Bruce and Dick Grayson walking in Wayne Manor. Looks pretty good. Basically, it's Titans Season 2 will debut next month in September on the DC streaming service. What did you think?
I loved it. I was surprised that they showed Bruce so early on, because I think he was like in the first like like 3 seconds of the trailer. I was surprised.
Literally,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought they would save him to kind of like, you know, that tease at the end. But everything else looked great. I mean, it's just, you finally get to see, got to see Kal-El, Superboy, got to see Krypto.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Superboy, yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that. Yep, we saw Connor and saw Krypto and the Titans in full effect, which I guess is cool, but I'm just kind of curious if anybody remembers the season finale of Titans of last year. If they're going to, I wonder if they're going to pick up from that, or they're just going to forget about it. Are they going to go like 5 years into the future? I'm just trying to figure out like what timeline is all is taking place.
I think it's taking place right then, because the very end of it had, if you remember, the very end of it after the Flash or after the visions that Dick had, it showed them in present time. That it was just a something going on Trigon was doing to Dick at the time. So it's still taking place in today's, in the timeline now. If you remember that,
I'm just kind of curious, see where they're going.
Well, like I said, I mean, there was no time jump. It was just Trigon messing with Dick's head. So they're gonna just go back to that moment in that cabin. I think it was a cabin or a home or something like that. And then it was
a cabin out there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just think it's just gonna be right back to where it dropped off with Dick under the influence of Trigon and them trying to figure out what the heck's going on.
Hopefully, I mean, I hope they do that instead of just forget about it, which a lot of people have been saying online, like, oh, we didn't see Trigon. What's happening? How come we're getting all the Titans formed? I go, isn't that what you wanted in the first place? It's the freaking Teen Titans.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing I thought was funny was Aqualad's. I swear when I first saw it, I thought that was Captain Marvel. Just the coloring of his suit was very Captain Marvel.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, red and gold. Like,
okay, yeah.
Well, but it's the Titans, and you got a little, if you check the trailer out again, you get a little sneak peek of Titan's Tower, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, so. I did. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. They're gonna head up that way. I know. Bruce has got a lot of hideouts, so maybe they adopted one.
Yeah, why not? That would make sense organically to have one of his, because he had tons of hideouts. If you saw season one, he had that that condo in the middle of some Detroit. So we'll see. Titans Season 2 will debut next month in September on DC streaming service. Mike, what do you got?
For me, actually, well, I can go ahead and stick into kind of the DC or DC Warner Brothers area. Looks like Warner Brothers is on the hunt for a new Batgirl movie director. Looks as though the director that they did have tied in did not stick around. I'm trying to find earlier who it was, but I have not found out. It was Josh Wheaton, actually, was previously signed on to write, direct, and produce it, but he's been pulled away to go do other things. So hopefully they'll find somebody. I'm really looking forward to it to see what they do with her, in that vein. Because, she is one of my favorite female characters or female superheroes in the DC realm. She, not only just what she did as, as Batgirl, but also as Oracle, and just the character alone of Barbara Gordon, just having that dichotomy of, she is the middle ground between Bruce and between her father, Commissioner Gordon. So I'd really like to see them do that and see. I know they've, DC's been doing that talk about, like you were saying last week, about them trying to separate the Batman universe. So I don't know if they're going to throw her into the mix of that Batman universe, or throw her in the mix of the Birds of Prey, which would make more sense, or throw her in the mix of the overall, DC, but just keep her by herself. So kind of interested to see which direction they go. I guess we'll find out more once they actually get a new director. So that's what we have for her. What do you have on that one? Any opinion?
I think they're going to go more in the direction. I think it's a good direction of Birds of Prey. I could see her being attached to that more than the upcoming The Batman by this guy. What's his name? Matt Reeves. Yeah, I can't see that Batgirl being attached to Matt Reeves' Batman film, but I could see it more attached to the Harley Quinn film. Just to go off, you're definitely a great character, and hopefully they'll do her some justice. Because the last time we really saw her in that live action was the '60s TV show, which I believe she passed away a couple of years ago. But and plus she has a couple of good story arcs. I mean, everybody knows about when she got shot in the back and became Oracle, which was probably one of her famous storylines. But she's had other ones out there too. Plus, she had a redesign in a new 52. It looks way good, way upgraded. So, I'm interested to see how they go with it, because for the longest time when they were talking about this Batgirl film, when Whedon was attached, Black Mask was going to be the villain in her film. But now they just took it off and used it in the Birds of Prey film. So I kind of wanted to see her in the Birds of Prey, but you know, we'll see. Hopefully, just take your time and stick in that universe with all the old girl power universe. Go for that for right now, and then see where they go from there. But definitely exciting. Hopefully, they'll get a good director on there. I'm sure they will.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they will as well. I mean, if they're taking their time on this one, it seems like doesn't sound like they're trying to rush. And that's usually when we see the bad mistakes happen.
Yeah,
Justice League.
Gotta have a whole episode for that. Yeah. That was hard to watch. Oh boy.
All right, so what's your next one?
Well, next I got not really news, but I was talking to a little birdie in the green room before the show who said this wasn't news. Not present company, it was somebody else. But the Joker is being described as a cinematic achievement on the highest level by the Toronto International Film Festival. I guess they got a chance to see Joker. That's why Joker wasn't really displayed at Comic-Con or mentioned at all, because they were saving it. And I guess they're saving it for award season. And apparently the buzz is Oscar talk for Joker and Joaquin Phoenix and Robert De Niro specifically. So it's supposed to be a terrifying version of the Joker, which, you know, like we haven't seen before. But it's good at least that we have, you know, people have actually seen it. So it's pretty good. But then again, this is coming from the guy who actually owns the Toronto Film Festival. He's not going to put movies in there that are crap. So, you know, take his opinion with a little bit of a grain of salt. But it is nice to hear it, though. I mean, but then again, I've heard that, you know, Batman v Superman was supposed to be the greatest film ever in Warner Brothers history. And then we know what happened from there. But it's nice to hear. It's just nice to hear that, you know, the movie that, you know, I didn't even want, and I don't think you wanted.
Yeah, I wasn't
at all.
For now.
I know you've been fighting, like, no, why do we need to know the history of the Joker? It's better to be unknown. But, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, and I want to see where they're going to go. You know, they've already made it, so let's just hope it's good. What do you think?
I mean, in a way, I'm looking forward to it because I want to see what they do. It's what I talked about. I couldn't tell you how many issues ago was about the humanization of a villain. It kind of, yes, it's good and it's bad, but when you're just focused on the villain, I think you and I had this talk last night. You know, we were talking about Thanos, you know, there was, you know, some of the best villains are ones you can relate to, but when you don't have a hero to go against this villain, it kind of makes the villain the hero in the story, and the Joker shouldn't have a kind of a sympathetic story. And the way everything I've seen about it, that's the main reason why I'm against it in that way. But I want to see what, you know, De Niro has done. I want to see what Joaquin has done on this, and I do enjoy what I've seen so far in the trailers. I just think it's going to confuse a lot of people. That's the other thing that a lot of people are going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones that aren't really aware, they know what the Joker is, the clown prince, you know, of Gotham, but they're going to see this and go, is this the Joker? And then when they see the Joker in the next Suicide Squad movie or in the Birds of Prey movie, I think he's in the Birds of Prey movie, that's going to confuse them. That's going to confuse the normal movie watcher. And I just think that's just kind of dangerous, because if you start confusing the normal people, it can turn them off quickly. When the normal people out there start feeling dumb about what we're presenting to them, that they'll just, well, I don't want to have to think that hard about it. Is that the right guy? Or is that the guy I saw in the two movies ago? Or is that somebody different? And I think that's just going to throw it off, and it's a very dangerous slope to be working in.
It's going to be important, I think. As you said, I think DC is creating this black label next year for some of their different comics, and I think this is taking place in like an Elseworlds-y thing, because how I started. Like, that's how I kind of liked the show Gotham. You know, for the longest time, I was totally against that show, but when you talked to me about it, like over and over again, like, hey, just think of it as an Elseworlds, and that was the one thing I never thought about. I was like, oh. Okay, and then I started enjoying Gotham for what it is. So I think the Joker movie, I'm just going to accept it for what it is. And if it's good, then maybe we'll have some more of those offshoot series that fucking done. Maybe Gotham by Gaslight, any of those. That'd be kind of cool. So that's why I'm kind of rooting for it, because DC has so they use their multiverses very well, and their Elseworld story is even better. So, you know, that's why I hope it's good.
Yeah.
So, but then again, this is one man's opinion, and he watched the movie. We haven't seen anything. So, yeah.
Well, like you said, it is the guy that's running the Toronto Film Festival, of course he's going to talk. You know, oh no, no, that's the worst thing I've ever seen. Don't go see it. But so yeah, no, he's going to talk it up.
He's not going to say, hey, this movie sucks. Don't watch it. It's not even worth it. So, you know,
and I agree with
money to get that thing in this festival. Yeah.
And I agree with you on the Elseworld comment. It definitely is an Elseworld vibe. But again, us as people that understand what an Elseworld is, we're going to grasp it better and we're going to accept it more. It's just, like I said, the normie moviegoer out there, they're going to go and they're going to get confused. And I just think they just can't handle themselves when they get too – and when there's too intellectual of a movie, it turns them off. More than you bring draws them in, so
yeah, we're gonna. It'll be coming out in October. So mice, what else you have? Mike, is it mice?
Mice, I don't know.
Sorry,
it's okay. Mice, mice and man, you know. So it has been announced this week.
That's a great book, by the way.
Sure, a few people have heard, but we want to talk about it. Disney Plus has just announced the Great Streaming Wars of the 2020 has revealed from our Uncle Bob Iger that they are going to be teaming with Hulu. So basically, there's a bundle going out with Disney Plus, Hulu Basic on demand tier, so not the live streaming tier, and then and ESPN Plus. They're going to be offering for $12.99 a month a package deal. And I was like, are you kidding me? That's amazing. I probably, you know, I'll grab the ESPN one. I'll enjoy it. But, you know, the Disney Plus and the Hulu is really, you know, what I'm looking for. You know, that's going to be that's going to be launching November 12th. And the basically the bundle actually just for with those three things is $5 cheaper than you would if you subscribe to all three platforms separately. And it's actually it's about equal to the price of what Netflix is now.
Yeah, so, Netflix is, what, 14 or 10 bucks a month?
Something. Well, I dropped Netflix a little bit ago because I was just like,
well, I pay $17.99 because I'm actually paying for, like, you know, my entire family, you know, spread out across the world. So, you know, just me being a good son, a good brother. So,
aren't you nice? Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
Nobody said anything nice about you today. There you go, folks.
Nah, I appreciate that. But I think it's just going back with this happening with a bundle. I think what you're seeing right now is going to be the future of streaming services. Like right now, I think Warner Brothers and HBO are teaming together to make their streaming service, and now you got Disney doing this with Hulu and along with their Disney Plus packages. And basically, if you have cable, if you're one of those people who still have cable is going to go bye-bye pretty soon. And I think the future is going to be these streaming packages, and they're going to mount up so much that you're basically going to be paying the same amount almost as you had for cable.
Yeah,
Which I think is definitely going to happen, because you're going to have Netflix, then you're going to have Disney Plus, then you're going to have something else. I mean, it's always going to keep going up and up, and basically what you had is going to what you're going to be paying for these new streaming services.
Yeah,
but it's the future.
Yeah,
it's definitely the future.
So. It was funny. It's got to be almost 8 years ago. I used to work for a cable company, and I was one of the managers there, and I would get those angry calls. You know, if a normal representative couldn't handle it, I would get the angry customer, and one of their things was, why can't I a la carte my package? And I'm like, because if we a la carte it, the price for each one's going to be more, and you'd actually pay more for, you know, more or the same price for that service. And now people are starting to get their a la carte thing, but then it's starting to turn into what you just said. Those prices are just going to be just as high, because if you throw in your $13 basically for the Hulu, Disney, and ESPN, then you throw in your price for your Netflix. If you're a DC fan like I am, there's another. So we're talking close to $30 to $40 just on subscriptions, and that doesn't include the internet service. So it's all right up there. So yeah, it's funny. It's one of those moments where I was like, I told you guys this was coming. Nobody listened to me when I was working it there.
Oh, and I knew it was coming when I was watching The Walking Dead season 5. That's actually the last season I saw with my father. And I told him, I was like, look, you know, we really don't need this anymore. I mean, we don't need cable. We can just go the way of streaming service. And after a while, he was totally against it. But you know, I don't want to say we were one of the first people to cut our cable, but I know we were the one of the first people who cut our cable, especially in this neighborhood. So where I live. But that is the future. Definitely is now. So that's what's going to happen. And basically, like you just said, it's going to add up to the basic price of cable.
So. Yep, it'll come right back around.
That's what you want.
So that's something I'm looking forward to. I mean, that is a good price.
It does. I think it's a great price, especially for the ESPN and the Hulu. I mean, there's some great shows on there, so I can't wait. Especially Disney Plus. So
yeah, so
looks like I'll be broke.
Yeah, looking over the Disney Plus, you know, just what they're gonna have on there still amazes me. You know, the eight Star Wars movies, 18 Pixar movies, whatever new they're coming out with for their TV shows. I mean, it looks great, and seeing this gives me a hope that they're gonna have, you know, have the actual viewers, you know, wants, you know, in line. So,
original programming too. So,
yep,
it's coming.
Yeah. So, what do we have next for you?
I got this news here for you, Mike. This year, three major series on CW are coming to an end. So, the CW is reaching a turning point. This season is going to be the ending of Supernatural, season 15, Arrow, season 8, and The 100, which is season 5. I'm not a big fan of The 100, but my dad is, and he actually got me a couple episodes to watch. It's okay show, a sci-fi show, but CW has reached a crossroads, Mike, for the first time probably since the invention of the CW, because one of the big hubs of their show is leaving, and one of their most popular shows that is introduced to DC World on the CW is also leaving, so that leaves room for some new programming coming to and the future of the CW. So where do you see the CW going in the future from here?
I see continuing. I mean, it's they've got a good record with WB right now in DC, you know, specifically. I can definitely see, you know, with Batwoman, she's picking up, you know, the spot that Arrow's leaving. And I mean, it's DC. You can just, you know, throw a rock at anything in DC. You probably can come up with a good TV show. So I'm not. Yeah, I that's where I see them heading more. Still branching away from the main. You know, this isn't the Flash. This isn't Arrow that we know as, you know, coming from writers. They took a lot of heavy liberties with these characters, and that's what I see. I see them taking them and making them easier to digest for the public, and that's what they've done.
That's exactly what they've done. They've made it more watchable. I think Mark Guggenheim on an interview one time was talking about his philosophies as far as, you know, what goes into these shows, and it's a heart, humor, and spectacle. And you can definitely see that with the CW show. It has a lot of heart, a lot of humor, a lot of spectacle. So they keep that going, and like you see, you got Batwoman coming this year. He's talked about more DC characters coming in the future, and now you get Crisis, which basically is going to be your reset. And you can start again. So basically, you know, every so often when you have one of these major crossover events, like a big one, I think the one after Crisis is, I think Darkest Night wasn't the next one after that. I might be wrong as far as crossover events go. But you can definitely do like these big events and then like end a couple of series and then start some new ones after them. So if that's the way they're going to go, you know, embrace the new and see what's going to happen. It's going to be sad to see some of these old shows go, like Supernatural. I mean, I basically grew up with that show, and it's going to be ending this year, which is insane. And who thought it was going to last 15 seasons, more than the X-Files, which is kind of shocking to me. But they're going to go forward from here, and they always have. They're always ahead of on point, too. The CW TV shows are always on point. They got good people behind them, so they'll be just fine, I think.
Yes, sir. Yes,
what do
sir.
You got, Mike?
Oh, my. One of my last ones. Actually, I forgot I had an extra one here. I had to bring up my notes for this. They have announced. Where is it? Sorry, folks. Lost my note there for a second. Come on. Open up.
It's okay, man. We forgive you.
Yeah. Well, they had announced, actually, just the other day, the more streamlined and the more accurate listing of the, because we were talking about the CW, about the actual guests that they're going to be having on there, because there was a lot of rumor mills being kicked around about, you know, who's going to be there, who isn't, and what characters they were going to be playing. So a lot of them have actually been clarified. The one for Tom Welling definitely has not been been approved for him either. He announced on Twitter the other day that he's like, no, it's that I haven't done anything. Just drew a blank on his name. I was listening to his podcast the other day too. Lex.
Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah, he had mentioned, he's like, I haven't heard of this. So right now they have guaranteed, definitely we have what we announced last week. We have, holy crap, I'm just drawing a blank here today, folks. I'm so sorry. Kevin Conroy definitely is coming in as a Bruce Wayne. They did announce Bruce Wayne for him. Burt Ward, unnamed character. Creese Williams.
It's got to be Robin.
Well,
Black Lightning.
No, yeah, he could just be in as a character. And this is just a way of nodding off, you know, giving a nod to it. You know, he doesn't. I'm just saying what I read and what they have announced, that he is an unnamed character.
I'm just gonna take a wild guess and think he'll be Dick Grayson.
Could be, or
that's what I'm. You know, he's retired, and you know his Batman and his world's dead, and you know, little cameo scene.
Maybe
this is a guess, though. You know, you'll see the Robin suit in the background. I don't know.
And also, Creese Williams has finally announce that. Brandon Routh will also be there. Of course, he was kind of already scheduled anyways for
that another. was the first yeah. major.
Yeah, but the other ones they really haven't. Those were just rumors getting kicked up. People were getting excited and making pictures of these characters and you know as other versions of themselves.
Yeah, because they're excited. I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean, this basically Crisis can span the entire DC TV catalog from the 60s on to present. I mean, you can do that now. I mean, it's like I've said before, DC's multiverses, you can just basically do anything to weave it all into the story. So
right,
I mean, why not be excited? I mean, we don't have clarification on Rosenbaum and Welling, but you know, we can hope, and hopefully they're in negotiations. It'd be nice to see those guys again.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this is coming from them. I mean, if you want clarification, I don't know any more clarification other than Michael Rosenbaum saying, I haven't heard anything.
It could be it could also be a surprise too. It could also be like, you know, a throwaway. Hey, you know, we're throwing you off the scent. We're not really going to be there, but it could be like a little surprise. Like, oh, look who's showing up in this scene here. So,
right.
You know, it could basically they're just trying to throw us off their scent.
They could be, or it could be just what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean, it could be too. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that point, but I'm just saying it'd be nice if they showed up. Very nice. So,
all right. And my last one actually is talking about Jason Momoa. He is looking like postponing the Aquaman movie. He is currently out in the Hawaiian Islands. He is actually trying to help save a certain area that is under construction.
I think there's a telescope, wasn't it? Some kind of telescope they're building out there?
Yeah, some telescope that they're building out there, and he's going out there. He's actually helped, you know, donate some money out there, but he's saying, you know, right now it's going to be, postponed. Mauna Kea is actually where it was at, and that he's going out there, you know, with the fellow protesters, protesting this building because it is tearing down a sacred site out there. So we may not see an Aquaman 2 for a while, but that's fine. He's perfect for him to get out there and do what he's trying to do. You know, help out his homeland.
Yeah, we've seen this before. A lot of actors have causes that they believe in, and you know, that basically saying, "Hey, I'm going to postpone this movie because I have this thing that I believe in," and that's fine. You're going to have a cause you can believe in and support it. You know, I'm all gung ho about it. If he wants to do that. Believe me, they will wait for Momoa to make Aquaman 2. They're not going to force the guy. Aquaman made over $1 billion, so I trust me, it's going to get made. It's just it might not be made, as close as we think it's going to.
Well,
be
I
made.
Think the main reason he'll be back. The main reason it was announced was that because they were looking at starting some pre-production and filming soon. So I think that's why it was brought up, mostly for that. For that one, so
I'm sure they have things in the works. I mean, you know, they just need him to get there. You know, when principal photography starts shooting, so they can still do like a little bit of pre-production, some pre-viz and all that stuff.
They can start getting it ready for him. Yeah.
They can get it ready.
Maybe they can have
just
a scene
put the suit on and he'll be there.
Maybe they can have a scene where Aquaman's out there, you know, protesting something and film that.
Hey, they could work it into the movie. Why not?
Yep.
You could see Aquaman, like, instead of the telescope, he's like protesting like sailors killing whales. I mean, he definitely could work that stuff in the movie. Why not? That'd be kind of cool. My man.
Very good. And do you have anything else there?
And that's all I got, Mike. What else is it? Oh, there I have. So that's all I got for the emissions board.
All right, very good. All right, folks. So this week we're actually going to talk about our history, our influences for sci-fi. And I know I grew up watching a lot of sci-fi, and you know, really growing up, not knowing what it was. I just always knew that I liked that. You know, from a very young age, you know, 5, 6, 7, you know, I just gravitated towards those stories before knowing, you know, that there was a title for it, you know, knowing that what I was a sci-fi fan or a geek. I would see other shows on there, just never caught my attention, but sci-fi was, you know, was something I gravitated towards. We wanted to venture in about like the things that like grabbed our attention. Like I said, we're going to avoid the main ones. You know, if you're a living, breathing American right now, Star Wars was always one of the things that grabbed you. You know, and Star Trek is the other side of that coin. And of course, like I said, you know, with Doctor Who, we have had a conversation about that. But we wanted to talk about the other side of those, of that. So
We're eliminating the top three.
Yeah, top basically, three, yeah, we're knocking the big ones out. I'm sure there'll be some mention of these as we go along, because it is going to be kind of hard to, you know, avoid them, because they both are pretty much those top three that we've already discussed about are big influences.
Oh yeah, but they're like, they basically cover blankets of all the series that I'm going to talk about. I mean, they're huge. I mean, to say they're not hugely influenced by the big three, I would say is a lie, because they are. So,
I mean, you just look at Doctor Who's influences on other shows. You look at Star Trek's influence, not just Star Trek's influence of what they did on the screen, but the writers. Most of those writers were heavy, you know, big names in sci-fi. You know, Gene Roddenberry made the ideas, but there were writers behind that wrote each episode. And those writers actually went on to do other things through the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know. So we're going to go ahead and get started. So I'm going to throw it out to you, Kane. I mean, what's for you was like your first earliest sci-fi memory?
Well, I think I would have to go with the Twilight Zone, because my mother used to watch that, you know, the old black and white, you know, singing, you know, these are the stories from the Twilight Zone, the weird intro songs, the weird stories. I remember the first episode that I saw was with William Shatner, you know, getting back to Star Trek. I told you it was a big influence. And it was an episode basically where he's on an airplane. And he's staring outside, and he swears to God that he sees this monster outside eating the engines of the plane. And each time the stewardess comes over to check on Will, you know, she looks outside, doesn't see anything. But Will sees it, and basically the monster gets closer and closer to the window as Shatner keeps staring. And he keeps warning the people on the plane, hey, there's somebody eating the engine. The plane's going to crash. Nobody believes this guy. And if you've ever watched the entire episode, I don't want to spoil it. I mean, it's over 50 years old. Actually, they remade it into a movie. Something happens, and I guess you should believe William Shatner. But that my earliest influence was a Twilight Zone, the odd stories. I could tell you about that story. I could tell you about the one where they're basically operating on this woman, that you see her perspective. And you never see the doctor's perspective, excuse me. And she's this beautiful woman, but the doctors and everybody's saying, oh, man, she's so disfigured and all that. And it pans towards the end, and you see that the doctors and everybody else have these pig-type faces. And they're the ones that are basically shaming on her because she's normal.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of those political things like built into Twilight Zone, too. Like I said, it's very Star Wars-esque. I think they came out about the same time, maybe before. But Twilight Zone was definitely the first one for me. I mean, black and white, being a little kid, watching that in front of the TV screen. My mom was the one who watched it, because she's into all that stuff, or was. But definitely was Twilight Zone for me, Mike.
Yeah, that was for William Shatner, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Eye of the Beholder was the episode that you were talking about for the messed up face. Yeah, and honestly, those were two of my favorite Twilight Zones. But I can't claim Twilight Zone as the big one for me that drug me in. when I can go back. And like I said, we have to take out the top three. But for me was the original Battlestar Galactica.
Ooh.
For me, the original, you know, with Starbuck and Adama, and that was for me, it was one of my memories I had. It was on Saturday afternoon. It was, you know, I'm going to date myself and completely put myself into one location. It was Hee-Haw. It was Hee-Haw and then Battlestar Galactica. And
dude, you're old.
That was my Saturday night. You know, get a little humor with it with Hee-Haw, and then you jump into Battlestar Galactica, and that was just, and to me, it was a mix of what I had already seen in Star Wars. Because I still had seen Star Wars, but again, still at that very young age, not really grasping everything. I just knew, wow, man, this is amazing. And then, wait, this is a TV show in space? And here are these two heroes that are battling what looked very similar to a Darth Vader-type character. When you look at the original Cylons, you know, they were very similar.
Yeah, but they're pretty close, yeah. And you had
the big helmets, you know. They were like the cross between Darth Vader and the Stormtroopers. They were troopers, but they had that big, you know, helmet thing. You know, it was one of those things I just remember. And I remember it was the second series for Battlestar Galactica is when they actually made it to Earth. And I remember them having motorcycles that flipped out wings and they would turn into jet ones. Yeah, they weren't the best ones, but still fun for me.
That's when I kind of tuned out. Yeah. when they made it to Earth, I think it was more about like the journey to Earth. Oh, they're going to make it to Earth. They're going to make it. And then when they finally made it, it was like, that's it. And like most of the cast had been changed.
Yeah, most people were recast or there was different people. But
it was just weird when they got to Earth. It was like, so I waited for this?
Yeah.
But you're right. It was definitely a great series. And I had my fun watching. I thought it was a very dark series the first couple of seasons too.
A lot of
death. I mean, especially the beginning of the Galactica, that the opening pilot when they destroyed Caprica and people just dying and burning. I'm like, oh my God. It was later remade somewhere else, which I guess we'll talk about.
But that is one. Yeah, another one. Yeah, I mean, that version of it, the reimagining, that was even just as darker and just hit me just as heavy too.
Yeah, especially the way they remade the Cylons too. Yeah. I mean, like, and they didn't ignore the past neither. You had like they had a couple episodes where you showed the old Centurions on there and their old ships, but they were more upgraded to look more like humans. And,
exactly.
It was a deep series too. I mean, very deep. Yeah. I thought the first three seasons were some of the best TV I've ever seen in my life.
They still hold up. The reimagined one definitely.
Especially like a character like Starbuck, who I thought was okay in the original series. They actually made her like a character.
Yeah.
Like, I thought she was a better character than Apollo, because Apollo in the newer version was kind of a weaker character.
Yeah, he was. He's more sibling. Oh, you did this and that.
He was more like his father was played by the. I'm going to forget his name. Adama. What's his name?
Edward James Not Olmos. Lord,
Edward James Olmos. Yes. Thank you. The captain from Miami Vice also. Right. But I thought he was one of the best characters on that show.
You're old.
You're old too.
You just referenced my picking on me about Hee-Haw, and you just referenced Miami Vice. Sorry.
What's wrong with Miami Vice? There's nothing wrong with wearing some white sport jackets with some pink shirts on.
Making sure your sleeves are rolled up in that sport jacket.
I look stylish. But definitely Galactica, I think, still holds up both of the series because they're big influences. And what was that one dog they had on that show? It was like a
God,
you remember that dog?
He was
supposed to be like the thing for kids.
Yeah, it was like a robot dog, bear looking thing.
And the newer series when it came out, I guess they didn't even reference it at all.
No, they didn't. In fact, they only showed the kid because there was a kid on the first one, and that he was all over the place. In the reimagined, they only showed him one time.
Yeah,
like there was like a brief little interaction, I think, between him and Adama. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. They're going to bring him in and maybe – because to me, as a young kid, he was my focus point. He was the Robin in the story. You know, most people, you know, forget that, you know, Robin was really brought in so kids could have a point of view in somebody to read and live vicariously through. And that's kind of what the kid was in Battlestar, and they just never had that. But again, I think, you know, it was because it was more geared adult oriented heavily, you know, I think it was, that's why they didn't bring him in. I think they were like, oh, let's test it. Oh no, that's not
a good movie. It was way more adult oriented. Yeah. Lots of adults. I will say it's what do they say when, before you watch a TV show, lots of adult situations involved in the show. That's
lots.
Let's just say that Battlestar had lots of adult situations. Yeah. So
you kind of, you're on that one. Now, anything else from that early? Like, I want to say, I mean, again, we are of a certain age here, but you know that some of our influences are still out there and they still show their head. You know, through the 70s and 80s specifically, were there any other TV or, you know, even movie maybe that drew you in?
There was one film in the 80s that really, I mean, there's a couple of them. You could look at Last Starfighter, which is a great sci-fi movie. There's tons. I mean, I would even say there's this movie called Space Rangers, which is really, or Ice Pirates.
Oh, you know, I remember like Ice that. Pirates. Ice Pirates was fun,
Ice Pirates is a fun movie. Crawl is another good movie you could say. But I say like the biggest one for me was Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon at early 80s with the Cream soundtrack. I mean, that was like, oh, this is going to be like just, it was just wild fun.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about it. I mean, it had not really nothing to do with like the serial, but it took the name and some stuff, Ming the Merciless and, you know, Planet Ming. I think it was Planet Ming. Was it Ming or was it? I forgot the name of the
movie. Yeah, okay, I believe it was Planet Ming. Yes. Yeah.
And they had a young Timothy Dalton in that movie, by the way, James Bond. That movie just like made me love sci-fi a lot more. It just made it more fun. I mean,
it was very
Star Wars influence. You had the main hero being like the Luke Skywalker type character, Ming the Merciless, the type of Darth Vader character, and then you had war, then you have the Hawk people, then you have music, and then you have insanity, and then lasers, Rocket Ship Ajax. You remember that saying, Rocket Ship Ajax approaching. Ooh, Rocket Ship Ajax, and then it's Flash Gordon approaching. It's just a lot of stuff in that movie influenced me. Probably it just influenced me way too much because, you know, probably still to this day, you know, it influences the way I act and do stuff. You know, I don't wear a Flash Gordon shirt, though. Maybe once in a while I'll try to run over some security guards. But other than that, hey, it was, Mike, it was a fun, balls to the wall, just a fun movie. And that definitely was one of my biggest influences.
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah. For me, it was just so much fun. And actually, that was one movie that actually was a movie and comic book connection for me, because I know they weren't the Hawk people that we know of in DC. They weren't the Thanagarians per se,
but they were. It's kind of crazy that, yeah, I agree, they weren't the Hawk people, but they were.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that when I went to a comic book store, when I was younger, that connection of Flash Gordon to the comic book of Hawkman just like grabbed me. And it was in a way kind of one of my first introductions into the comic book world was that movie. And that's one reasons why I left. I mean, I loved the actor that played the Hawkman in there.
Oh, you know, I forgot his name.
Out there with big old beard. Dive.
You know, I love that dive. And you had the queen in the background. It was just like balls to the wall crazy. Yeah. And it's just like the movie knew what it was. Didn't care.
That's there was no illusions about what it was or what it wasn't. It knew, hey, this is what we are. Listen to the music. I mean, I'm sure even Queen was like, you know, okay, yeah, we're going over the top on this one.
And they did. And by the way, it's a great soundtrack. If you get a chance to pick that up, Flash Gordon by Queen, please check it out.
Yeah, that is that's actually one of their better ones. For me, in the 80s, it was a movie, TV movie, actually, which eventually turned into a television series, and that was a TV show. And for most of you don't realize, back in the day, they had TV events, like major events. So if they were going to do a TV movie, it would run for, you know, 3 to 4 days. You know, starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, might have a break for the weekend and maybe pick up next Monday, Tuesday, and it would be a huge movie. For me, it was V. If you remember.
Ooh.
Yeah, you
know, yes, back, I remember V, yeah.
Back in 1984, basically it was, you will find a lot of references to movies today from V. You will find references from Independence Day took from V. very heavily. In fact, there was one scene that was like straight up.
Yeah, very. When the ships are hovering over the city in V, that's very Independence Day right there.
Yeah, and if nobody knows what V is, basically V is a TV movie. It eventually turned into a TV series, and then it was reimagined back in 2009, which I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It still recognized.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
It was a show where aliens from outer space came down with these massive saucers and visited certain cities around the country. And they come out in these beautiful red suits. You know, they're very sensitive to light, so they have to do this. And they start helping society, helping with diseases, helping with the homeless. And they're very, you know, they're very helpful. If you're a student of history, you will find that there is a lot of signs of how they were dressed. The symbol that they had on their ships for their planet and their people. Very Nazi Germany.
Yes, yes. The uniform. Yeah, big time Nazi Germany.
And basically, eventually, we come to find out that that these people, these aliens, aren't what they seem. There's a layer of skin over top.
Oh, no.
great one. You had Mark Singer on there. He was played Mike Donovan, Faye Grant, who was Julie Parrish in that. It was just fun. And like I said, it was just a straight-up movie on TV, and then they eventually drifted over to the series. The series didn't last more than a season. It wasn't.
Wasn't it two seasons?
No. They only. You sure? Yeah. And I don't even think they really did a full season. I think they only went up to like 19 or 20 episodes. Not even the full regular season. But then they did redo it in 2009 with. Goodness.
Marina Baccarin. Yeah, Marina Baccarin. Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was really great that how they picked it up. And they kind of went with the same feel, just a little bit of a twist to it, but it was just so much fun. And again, it was one of those ones that now this one went for two seasons.
That's what I was. I knew one of them went for two seasons.
It's just so much fun. And just what they did, the twists, the symbolisms that they had. And I think this is where I started learning more about what sci-fi was, and then what I was more interested in sci-fi. And you'll find you'll see a pattern to what my sci-fi is. Very military sci-fi. I'm a military sci-fi fan, I've noticed. And you'll find out, you know, later on where more and more where that comes from. But that's, like I said, this was one of those ones. And then I gotta say, I'm gonna throw an extra one on here around this time frame. Actually, it was like mid 70s to or late 70s to early 80s was one. This one, and I'm probably gonna be the same for you, Buck Rogers.
Yes, yes, yes. With one of my biggest crushes ever, which is Jennifer Grey. Is it Lauren Grey?
Yeah, I think that was Lauren Grey because Jennifer Grey.
Lauren Grey. Oh,
yeah. Jennifer Grey was Baby. Nobody puts Baby in the corner.
Well, I like Jennifer Grey too, but I think Erin Grey. Erin Grey. I'm sorry. Okay. Who's Lauren Grey?
I'm not sure. We'll have to look her up and at least maybe talk about her so she doesn't feel left out. even with that one, because that was the 79 and it ran. You know, it started in the 81. I think they started coming back out again, but again, only a few seasons. But that one is just like Flash Gordon. Very serial. It's heavily influenced from the serial. And it just, again, another fun one. You know, a very similar story to Flash, and that it's he's a human from our time, or from that time, and gets put into a futuristic scenario.
Yeah, I think, what was it? He was a space shuttle captain, and he got sucked into a wormhole. And the wormhole took him, was it 200 years into the future or something? I remember that they kept saying that, like, in old sci-fi TV shows, they used to give you, like, the what happened to the guy. Like, and Buck Rogers was zapped into this black hole, and he woke up, and it was like, but it was 2,000 years later.
Yeah.
I kind of miss those guys.
So apparently it was 1987 astronaut and Captain William Buck Rogers, Ranger 3. He was 504 years into the future.
Yeah, that's it. I know it was like a way, because they would show him like go spinning around, and then they saw the years like just getting clocked up, and he woke up on Earth. Great show, Tweaky.
Yep,
that little robot that he had.
Yeah, because this one started as a. There was a theatrical release for this. This is one of those rare ones that actually they did a theatrical release and then jumped right into the TV show. Because this came out, I think it was 1979. Yeah, March 30th, 1979. And then they had a TV series with the same cast, which is one of those rarities that you don't see anymore. I know Marvel attempted it with the Inhumans, which they probably could have done it with a better product. Let's put it that way.
Let's just leave it at that. Let's not talk about the Inhumans.
but I mean, it was a good idea. when I first heard about what they were doing with the Inhumans, I was like, Buck Rogers did that, and that was actually worked out. So, but that is, yeah, so definitely a Buck Rogers is one of the ones, and I had a feeling, I had to throw that one in there, because I thought it was going to be you and I both were on that one.
So it was a good one.
So after that one, the 80s, what did you have?
Well, I got one that I guess was sort of the beginning of the 90s, and probably one of my favorite series. I guess as Captain Mike has always said, he just said recently, in a couple seconds ago, he's a big fan of the sci-fi and military stuff. So I guess you can see where my allegiance is going to be too, because I'm more of the sci-fi weirdo stuff. And one of the series that I like was Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks was way out there. If you've never seen it, I mean, people have seen. If you've seen Stranger Things, basically, Twin Peaks is the grandfather of Stranger Things. It definitely had a lot of twists and turns. To me, very sci-fi. Just like the weird town, weird getting murders and stuff like that. We don't know why. What's going on? This different weirdo club. It's just a lot of just crazy interconnecting stories that led to the whole season. I mean, basically Silent Bob. You know, Kevin Smith got his name from one of the killers in that show, which was, you know, Silent Bob. So, yeah, Twin Peaks is definitely one of the ones that got me rolling in the 90s. I think it was late 80s, early 90s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah, because it only ran, what, season 2, maybe 3?
Yeah, that's it. And then they actually revived it a couple of years ago. It was on Showtime, which was actually really good, too.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It was
Twin Peaks is definitely one of my series.
And I think...
And you can see where...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, well, for me, around that time frame, actually, would have been X-Files for me at that point. My mom was a Twin Peaks fan. I don't know if where I was and what I was doing. I just can never grab it and sit down and really watch it. But X-Files really,
I think it's one of those series, as time goes on, yeah, you gotta watch it. It's more like it gets better with time, but I can see like people, my brother was a huge X-Files fan. He still is to this day.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't, see, with Twin Peaks, I think one of my big turnoffs was the actor, the main actor in there. I wasn't a fan of his.
Robert McCullum, I believe.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know, something about him, I just like always kind of turned me off about, just so I couldn't watch him. I think it was his delivery or something. That's the one thing that always stuck out in my head. Whenever I think of Twin Peaks, I just automatically see his face, and I was like, ugh, no, I can't. but I guess for that, the next step, yeah, would be X-Files. To, you know, it was kind of in the same vein, but a little bit more geared towards, simplistic, more of a simplistic thing. You know, it was definitely dealing with the weird and the wacky.
But more, it's still on that vein of the military tip that you like a lot, yeah, too, also. It definitely has military vibes. So, I mean, the military is involved. So,
yeah, well, usually on that side of it, the military is usually the asshole and the bad guy.
And I think in this series, the military was kind of clueless as to what's going on. A lot of it. Crazy.
But, yeah, no, but, I mean, the X-Files, the X-Files falls under that same umbrella and that same feel of the overarching, like, supernatural was. It's very much, hey, you know, we have one thing going on that's taking place over the whole season, or an overarching for the whole show, but yet in the middle we have these fun little, you know, monsters of the week, so where we get to learn the personalities of these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to learn about, you know, a little side thing about, you know, why do people call Mulder spooky? We find out more about Dana and her being a doctor, and, you know, some of her former partners and former lovers. We find more out about Skinner and the Smoking Man on little tiny things. Probably one of my favorite ones. They did that black and white episode that ended with Cher, the Cher lookalike singing.
Oh my god!
And that was the one, you know, where they were talking. They had this one guy that would cover the house like it was getting termite treated, and he would make out with the women, and he would start impregnating all these women, and all these kids were having these like I think tails, and it was just it was just so much fun. But it was also, when you watch the show, you could tell that show, they didn't take themselves too serious either. They had their fun and goofy shows.
I would have to agree with you. I wasn't the biggest X-Files fan in the world. Like I said, my brother was. So I would say that, it was definitely one of those grandfather series that led to like a series like a Supernatural or, so on and so forth. But, I was a big fan of the movies, though. I liked the movies. I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, the movies were definitely done very well. It's funny, as I remember, because it's one of those moments. Just the sound of Mark Snow, wasn't his name?
Yeah, I believe it was Mark Snow. I have to look that up.
Yeah, I know his first name was Mark. But just that sound of the soundtrack in that opening scene, it's one of those sounds that you just instantly know. And I think it was like season 3 or 4. I was living out in LA, and in the apartment complex I lived in was this circle apartment. There was a pool in the middle, and the apartments were wrapped around the pool. And it was only 2-story tall, maybe 10 apartments every level. So really only 20 people lived, 20 or 20 apartments were in this building, and it was very open, very communal. And I remember I'd be outside doing something, and one of my neighbors would have, his window open, and all you would hear is that do 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 do, and go, and I just we could all know it was time to watch, and you would see us all just either we'd all run into each other's house, or we'd go separate in our separate ways to our own homes. But it was one of those things that draws back a very strong memory of watching the X-Files, but that the communal living that at that apartment complex.
Yeah, the opening intro to X-Files is definitely one that's going to bring people together.
Definitely. So for you, I guess we're now into the 90s now. What do you have?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what I got. I think it's one of the greatest series that was ever created before Battlestar Galactica, the reimagining, and that's Babylon 5. I love this series so much, and I was introduced to it because it used to air Friday nights at midnight. And I would watch it, what the hell is this series? What is it about? I had no clue. Basically, I was naked walking in. Like, my brother had watched a couple episodes. He was kind of turned off. He's like, it's nothing about it. I'm like, let me give it a shot.
Right.
And at the beginning, it was very, very Star Trek-y. I was like, okay, they're on this space station. Basically, all these alien races are coming on there, see what's going on, trying to, it's basically like the center of the universe. And there's some Earth people on there, just different alien races, some certain alien races that hate each other. And then there's this alien race that nobody knows too much about, but they come a big part later on. It's almost like that overarching arc, and you find out about, if you haven't seen the series, the Shadows and the Vorlons are these ancient old races which have gone away for years, especially the Shadows, but now they're reemerging, and they're coming back. And you see little hints of it from the first season. Season 2, they replaced the original commander with, I think it's Bruce Boxleitner. He comes in, he's Commander Sheridan, which is, I thought he was awesome. I thought he was great. And then he had a relationship with an alien, eventually had a kid. Just a lot of great stories, very politically themed too. And it just branched off from certain races to other races. Then you had these wars, and you had a lot of stuff that went on there. And I think Babylon 5, hopefully they've been talking about making a movie of that. I think Bryan Singer's been attached to it. I don't think he's going to be doing anything in the near future. But hopefully they can do something with Babylon 5. There's a lot of rich texture.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
A lot of good stuff. And they did a lot of also TV movies, which are actually very well received. Excalibur was one of their movies they did. I just think very underrated. And unfortunately, two of the actors of that show passed away, which kind of sucks. But I've always wanted to see another Babylon 5 series reimagining, especially nowadays, because the special effects in that series back then I thought were awesome, because and to come where we are right now, I mean, I think it can be incredible. So that's, for me, it's got to be B5.
Yeah, I definitely one of those ones. I loved watching it. I think whatever I was doing at the time in my life, I couldn't consistently watch it, so I couldn't get really into it. But it's one of those ones I do know there's a very, very strong cult following for it, and they are one of those ones that are very small, but they are very strong about their opinion and what they want. And yeah, there is a lot of talks about that. Actually, I even think Babylon 5 actually had the first female-female kiss.
Yes,
on television.
Did.
So, I mean, when you talk about the political side of them and the social things that they talked about, they definitely, you know, address something that people still are like, oh, my goodness, they're doing that. Yeah, well, they did that back in the 90s. It's people just forgot about it, or when it was done that one time and just didn't become a consistent thing. So, yeah, it's Babylon 5 definitely is one I would definitely like to throw in and definitely into that list. I wish I was a bigger fan of it.
I'll tell you what, going back to the original Big Three, it has a Star Trek connection because Chekhov is a huge part of this show. He's part of what's called the Mind Cops.
Yes.
Which is another thing. They have another storyline with the Mind Cops going forward, which I think is amazing. And
yeah,
wasn't
there like a big, like, a secondary like book or something, like they did some books on those, I thought.
Yeah, because what they never showed was the, I think it was called the Mind Wars eventually, because after the Shadow Vorlon War, it was like another war and another war. It was always a war happening on that show. So it's just, they actually did the Mind Crimes in a book form. So because they never could do it on the show, I think it was because they were convoluting too many things, and J. Michael Straczynski had some, I guess, disagreements with the network. So
right.
But definitely B5 is one of my favorites. Hopefully it'll be revitalized one of these days, and I think it's a huge influence going forward.
Hopefully. Now mine, I can't say that it's influenced by any of the Big Threes, and I can't say that it's influenced anything since. You might come up with something maybe that's been influenced by it. But SG-1, Stargate. I am a massive, massive Gate fan. I have owned all seasons on DVD. I literally spent a vacation when I first really got into it and they were coming out with the DVDs. I spent a vacation. Literally every morning I would get up, I would drive to Best Buy, pick up season 1, go home, binge watch it all day. Get up the next morning, go out to Best Buy, pick up season 2, come back. I binge watched all of Stargate, because it was, again, one of those ones when I finally got into it, because it originally started on Showtime. First season was on Showtime, and so they were going to get rid of it, and then Sci-Fi's like, no, we'll go ahead and pick it up, and then it ran for 10 seasons on Sci-Fi. And again, I just... great story. A lot of the writers from one of the Big Threes was definitely there from Star Trek. One of the big writers came from Star Trek, and a lot of interesting storylines. Again, military sci-fi. I think this one hit the fun and hit the feels on a lot of levels for me. Had history, had the military, had science fiction. And it really blew my mind on everything that they did, and the characters were amazing. Richard Dean Anderson. Sorry, it's one of those three name actors. Richard Dean Anderson was great. I mean, his personality came through. It was a different character from the Jack O'Neill that we saw in the Stargate movie. They recognized that movie had happened. But they jokingly made reference that when somebody would ask Richard Dean Anderson his name, he's like, oh, I'm Jack O'Neill with 2 L's. There's another Jack O'Neill out there, because there was a difference in the spelling. So they would always make jokes about that. Again, I was growing up, I was a Simpsons fan, and Richard Dean Anderson was a Simpsons fan. So he always tried to throw in a Simpson reference, not into every show, but quite a bit. They were going to be stuck at some planet, and he's like, oh, don't. They're like, what? He's like, I forgot to set my DVR. It's Sunday night. Didn't say The Simpsons. Just said, I forgot to set my DVR. It's Sunday night. And because he said adult. So there were a lot of references there. But eventually, I mean, after some time goes by, some of the actors had to leave. We did lose one of the main actors that played Daniel Jackson, Michael Shanks. He went away for about a season, season and a half. He started kind of drifting off there. We had, I just drew a blank on his name that filled in for him.
I'm trying to think, too. I was more a fan of the SG-1 movie and the subsequent movies they showed on Sci-Fi, which are actually pretty cool.
But yeah, the movies they had on Sci-Fi. Now, those were ones that were after the fact, that were after the series was pretty much done. I think one was done when the series was going on, and then another, then the two of them, I think, or one or two afterwards, were right after the season.
Yeah, no, one of them was like involved in the snow or in Antarctica or something. I know that was one of the movies I saw.
That was, one of those. That was Corin Nemec, actually filled in for Michael Shanks, and he filled in as a different character. He didn't become Daniel Jackson. It was just he played a Jonas Quinn on there. Then eventually, Richard Dean Anderson, he was getting older, wanted to spend time with his family. He bowed out. They brought in Ben Browder from. Just blacked on that one.
Ben Browder's been on a lot of stuff. He sounds familiar.
Ben was in Farscape. Farscape. I knew it started with an F. Yeah. So they brought in Ben, and they also
another great series, by the way, Farscape.
Yeah. but they also brought in Claudia Black, who was also in Farscape. So they were playing. They both came over after Farscape ended. They both came over but played different characters. So it was. I mean, just for me, it was a fun show. It just again the military mix. There are some very strong. Ethical things that they would go over in some of their stories. You know, one was about, you know, slavery, owning people, owning a woman, and just some great, great shows. And then, of course, you know, you branched off from, you know, SG-1 to Stargate Atlantis. From Stargate Atlantis, you had Stargate Universe, which I thought was great. I was wondering, I was like, man, the culture and people's taste is changing. How are they going to continue this? And that's what they did. They twisted it to be a little bit more mature in basis. It was a little bit darker. They also did, I think, one animated show but had nothing to do with really about the Stargate other than they had a Stargate in there. But it's one of those ones I've always wanted to see a resurgence of, you know, starting.
They've talked about doing.
They kicked it around so much.
They've kicked it around like I think it was a Dean Emmerich and they did the original movie and they've been kicking around the idea of like starting the movies again. I'm like, why didn't they just go back to sci-fi and start it on? I mean,
I think it's the movies, but it's one of those ones because it was so long that the movie sort of became a second thought because they created such a bigger world than what the movie created.
Yeah, like Buffy. Buffy was the same way. Yeah, Buffy started out as a movie and then the TV series was completely different than the movie. So it's. Yeah, I can see that point going forward.
So that's why they're like, man, they appreciate what they did on the show and how they kept their product alive, really, you know. But they're like, man, we want to kind of go back and do it. At the same time, they don't want to ignore what these guys have done for so long. That is one of my more recent shows, I guess you could say. I mean, it's not too recent. It's been off the air for quite some time. 2007. So it's been off for a while, but it's still a more recent one, I think, you know, that I've been influenced by heavily. And again, this was the one that actually finally dawned on me. Oh shit, I like military sci-fi.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that you like military sci-fi now.
Yeah, and it's very odd. It's like I'm not a military person. I've got a lot of friends and, you know, some families that have been military, but I've never been one for military. You know, maybe back when I was younger, I thought about it for, you know, a little bit, but not a, you know, gung-ho type of military person. Just very interesting. I think one of the ones, the reasons, like especially with Stargate, that they actually worked hand-in-hand with the United States government and the Air Force to do this, to make sure that the certain things that happened are right. They followed certain policies and procedures that, you know, they make sure that it was, you know, set up the right way. Even had a few senators and a few admirals, actually, and generals pop on the show as guest stars. So yeah, they definitely worked hand in hand with the United States government on that. But that is mine.
Not bad. Like I said, I was more a fan of the movies than Stargate, but I'll have to check out one of the series once again. Maybe I'll give it another chance. you know, we'll see what happens. I guess we're going to go to me, right?
Yeah.
the next one I like.
And this, and I think we're about close to the end on this one, so this will be our last one each.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. Can I give you two quick ones?
Sure.
I'm going to give you two quick ones. I'm going to give you one that I believe was in the 90s, and I'm going to give you one that was in the 2000s. The first one I think you're going to know pretty well. It was a time-traveling, multiverse crazy show called Sliders.
Yes.
This show was weird and ridiculous, but it introduced to me the theory of multiverses and, like, different versions of you and just, like, insanities. And, like, even the beginning, Jerry O'Connell tells you – he's the fat kid from Stand By Me, by the way. And it just shows you, like, hey, you know, we're not just one universe. We're, like, all these universes. And they team up with this doctor, this singer, and they go to these different multiverses trying to get back to their own universe. And it's to me, it's pretty crazy and hair-braining. I think eventually Jerry leaves the show and some other dude who looks exactly like him comes in. And
well, his brother actually came in. That was actually Jerry's brother.
Okay, yeah.
That's why he looks just like me. Yeah.
Okay, that's why it looked like. I always wonder, like, how come this guy looks exactly like Jerry? Oh, it's his brother. Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
There's some DNA in there.
Yeah, okay, just wondering. But the core of the show was, like I said, I guess, you know, you're seeing what our interests are like. Mike is more of the militant style of his sci-fi. I'm more of the zany, crazy stuff like this. And
well,
Sliders
I would say
was
militant.
Definitely one of
those. I'd say military, not militant.
Well, I'm just saying military. You like more of the militant military stuff. Then it's the same thing, Mike. I mean,
don't mess with you.
But I like more of the zany stuff, and Sliders was definitely one of those.
Oh yeah, definitely zany. Who was it? Rembrandt, wasn't it him?
Rembrandt Brown. He was the sax player.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I loved him. He was one of my favorite characters because he was just like, he's not a scientist. He was a musician that just got dragged along.
Yeah, literally. I think he was just walking around the street in the pilot when he got zapped into one of the slider holes, and I was like. And he went from there. I think in a different universe, he was like a king. It was pretty crazy.
It was fun. Yeah, definitely fun trip. That one always reminds me of, and I think you and I have talked about this one before. Was Voyager?
Yeah,
not Star Trek Voyager, but an early '80s show called Voyager, where it was time very similar in way. And again, I'll be the one to do it today, folks. Very similar in like a little bit of a backstory, very Doctor Who-ish. Mm-hmm. That they are part of the time stream, and they're just there to correct things. Had a Doctor Who had a time jumper.
It was a compass.
It was a compass. I love the compass. Yeah. Every time I ever see a compass or any like wristwatch or pocket watch type thing, I always think of the.
And I have been looking for that compass for so long, and I cannot find it. It makes me angry.
But you know, it's that one. And Sliders, kind of those two, kind of always in my mind existed in the kind of the same level.
Yeah, they're very very similar. You could almost say the Sliders was like the it was born off of the Voyagers almost. So it's an interesting one, but definitely that's one of my favorite ones. And then last one, if I could sneak it in real quick, is actually a show that I started watching a couple of years ago by a mutual friend of ours. And that's Fringe. I love it. I love Fringe. And Fringe is all about science and just different universes and but it was more sciencey, very sciencey. Not very like futuristic stuff, but it had some elements in there. But like same thing, a little zanier, different universes, different versions of yourself. If you ever get a chance to watch it, it has one of my favorite actors in there, who was I think it was Lord Theoden in Lord of the Rings trilogy. He was in the Return of the King, I believe. He was the steward of Gondor. I forgot his name. I thought he'd always be a perfect Alfred. But anyway, he plays one of the doctors, and they're going against – I believe they started this company, and they threw him out because the doctor eventually went insane, but he was committed because he knew a lot of stuff. He loses his son, but he goes to another universe to take basically his son from another version of himself. It's pretty crazy, but it's very sciencey of what they do. It kind of makes sense. And Leonard Nimoy, another Star Trek connection, is in this show also. He's one of the main characters. What did you think of Fringe, Mike?
Never did, because the same friend that you refer to told me the same thing. And it was one of those ones that's on my list but never got into it. And I really have always wanted to, because everything I've read about it, it just looked like so great.
It's so much fun,
and I just it's on my list of shows in my catalog online, but I just haven't gotten to it yet. a damn 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, if there was only like more hours in a day. And if it was only like, you know, not 2 days in the weekend, maybe 3 day weekends, you know, make an eighth day, that'd be nice. But definitely Fringe is one of those. It's up there for me. I can't really explain it because it's hard to explain.
You explained it pretty good. I think you did a pretty spot on job because of how weird it is to explain.
It is like, and I think as we said in this podcast, one of the common things you can see that what you and I like, you're more the military type sci-fi. I'm more like the whacked out zany type, you know, craziness, because that's kind of how I live my life. But
hopefully my last one will throw a wrench into that mindset, because I think this one falls in the middle.
Okay.
As best as it can. My last one, and I'm only going to do this one, only ran for 14 episodes back 2002. And it's taken a life of its own, has had its own movie, has spawned probably one of the best directors in our time right now, that's, you know, touched some of the best movies and highest grossing movies. But my last one is Firefly, American space western. It's just the idea of a space western. And again, I can't say it's directly influenced from a Star Trek, but the original concept for Star Trek was a western in space. They never quite got it. This got it. This nailed it down. It's a story about a group of space goers on a ship, the Serenity, traveling around the galaxy. And it's the cast of characters and the different nuances of these people that are on there is amazing. I just in a 14 season run or 14 episode run, you just connected with these characters. Val, who was the main captain, and he's a former war vet of the losing side. So you take in that western feel that, you know, basically he fought for the South and lost, and he's basically out in the Old West, doesn't want the government to be around him, wants to just live his life and do his own thing. He is not the perfect character. He has a lot of flaws. Very similar in a way. Again, I guess you can branch it out to Star Wars. He is your Han Solo, but he is what we wanted Solo to be. Very gritty. Had a code. Screwed up code that it was, but it was a code. You were on his ship. You were family. He watched out for you. And the rest of the cast of the characters, they eventually pick up they have the rest of the crew is his pilot and Wash. And then you have Zoe, his wife, who's a former military with the captain. They also went ahead and they picked up another mercenary of sorts, being Jane. And, he's a cut and dry kind of guy, you know, pay me or I'm not working for you. Then they, you have your ship's mechanic. I almost had the whole cast too.
You almost had it.
I was doing pretty good there too.
You were close, man. You almost got there.
Kaylee.
Yeah.
And then you have Jewel State. She's she turned into a major, sci-fi, actress. But she
Jewel
was
Stady,
she was
a, yeah. yeah. Summer Glau, Marina
yeah.
Baccarat.
Yeah,
Nathan
you have
Fillion.
Amazing cast on here. Every single one of these people have gone off to, Nathan Fillion has gone off to have a great career in Alan Tudyk, Gina Torres. Every person on here has either gone on to have a great career or had a good career beforehand. Ron Glass, who played the Shepherd Book, who's probably one of my favorite characters. You're never quite sure about Book because you don't know if he's really a shepherd or not. There are certain times and certain things that get done. You don't know if that's really him. They all have their own hidden stories, their own backstories, and you don't know for sure what they are. And it's one of those moments I hate Fox because they dropped the ball on this. This is one of those times when they moved this show for 14 episodes. They moved it about three times. From Friday to Thursday to Sunday, they bumped it around, and you can't get a solid following with doing something like that.
No, sir.
But again, one of my all time favorites. It's 14 episodes. I can watch those over and over and over again. And if nobody's seen Firefly, do yourself a favor. It's great. This is Josh Wheaton's first one outside of the Buffy universe, if I'm not mistaken, other than Buffy and Angel.
Because he finished Buffy and Angel, and then he went on to do this, and then after that he was campaigning for a long time, I believe, especially at cons, you know, just to get the movie made. And the movie is on another level, by the way. I love the movie.
Oh yeah, the movie picks it up. I mean, this show even got, you know, 14 episodes. It actually won a Primetime Emmy Award in 2003. I mean, it's outstanding visual effects for a series. I mean, it was just canceled too soon. There's so much of a story that you could tell because of the characters. They did their best on what was it for the movie, Serenity, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah,
Serenity. Yeah, you know, they did that, and it's, you know, it's one of those rare occasions where a show ends too soon, but it gets a second life, and it got a second life in the movie, you know, in the movie theater.
I'll tell you, introduced one of my favorite actors in that movie. I think it was one of his early performances. He was the operative. That's Chiwetel Ejiofor, man.
Oh yes, yeah.
He was so good in that movie as the operative, like a villain, but he was intelligent. He had a conscience. It was just amazing. I thought, I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? And of course, you know, Chiwetel has got a huge career after that, but just amazing that performance. Even that movie, so good. Mm-hmm. So good. I mean, I've seen it, like all the episodes as you have. I mean, not as many times as you have, but the series definitely underrated, definitely gone way too fast. You know, I think if this series came out in like nowadays in streaming service, it would have still been going.
And it's one of those ones you can watch now, and it still holds up.
Oh, yeah.
The special effects still hold up. The stories still hold up. And the actors still hold up. I mean, if anybody's ever a Castle fan, and if, you know, if you're like, oh, man, I really like Castle, but you never saw Firefly, you just watch one of the Halloween episodes for Castle.
He dresses up. He dresses up as I think he makes a mention of it too. He's like, Dad, who are you dressed as? He's like, oh, just some captain.
No, he says that. He says, I'm a space cowboy. That space cowboy doesn't work. What are you talking about? So, but yeah, that one for me, that'll be the final one for me. Yeah, was Firefly, and it is one of those ones. There has been a lot of sci-fi shows out since, but to me, nothing's really captured that magic that's been out there. You know, we did talk about Battlestar Galactica. There was a different kind of magic there, but really since then, nothing's grabbed me and said, hey, you gotta watch this here. So
there have been good series out there, but I think as far as, like, you know, the cast really made that show. It's one of they were so close together. They were believable.
Oh, yeah.
The relationships, you could understand, you could have empathy. And I think when you have empathy for characters in a series, it makes it better. You're like, oh, I want to keep watching. Where's it going? You know, what's the backstory on this guy? What's the backstory on this guy? It's kind of like what you just said. Like, what did this mechanic go through? What did he go through? Like, what happened in his past before? It's like the stories in your head that you make up of these characters, you know, they could just build for, like, many, many years to come. And I think they made a comic book series.
There is a comic book series out there. There is actually – they just released a few book series, which I'm wanting – I've got one of them downloaded, actually. It's waiting for me to be able to jump over.
It's waiting for your eyes.
Yeah, but it's one of those ones I definitely want to check out. In the expanded universe that they did create in the comic books, from everybody that has said, it's what they wanted. They just wanted it bigger. Very similar to, like, with Smallville. When Smallville came out, you know, after it ended, you can go back into the comic books and you can continue, I think, up to season 15. The comic books picked
up. And I think the season after Smallville ended on the TV, they had, like, the first series Smallville. It was, like, introduced Batman.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite runs. I think it was, like, a 5-issue run, but it was really well done.
Most of them were that.
You could actually see that. Yeah, it was, like, you could actually see that. That run in the comics in TV. I was like, oh, because when I read it, I was like, this is going to be dumb. And I was like, oh, it made sense.
Yeah, they connected everything. So, but folks, that is our journey into sci-fi. One of the areas that we are very influenced by sci-fi. We just don't have a chance to really talk about it. You know, it'll pop up in conversation here, but we haven't had a good, like, sit down and talk about sci-fi in a while like this. So,
that was good. Yeah. Thoroughly enjoyed it, especially I learned a lot about you and what your sci-fi styles are like now. I'm only for more military stuff.
Apparently that's what I need. But
I knew that you were a militant guy.
Yeah,
you know, it kind of makes sense.
Didn't realize it. Yeah, son of a bitch. So, well, I hope you guys all enjoyed the show. I know, again, like I said, we definitely enjoyed going over all of this. So if you guys want to check us out, we are, you know, Heroes Asylum. We have a website for heroesasylum.com. On heroesasylum.com, you can go and find all of our pages. You can find us on Twitter, you know, all the Facebooks. But you can find all of our episodes. We also do a second podcast called Midnight Movie Review. And you can actually get that on this feed. We do a sit down and just review a movie and just bullshit and laugh about it, you know. Kane, what do you got for us?
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. Reach us at the Facebook page, where it's our main area of contact. You know, if you have any thoughts, any suggestions on movies that we could do watch-alongs to, or even subjects, news, post them on there. We're very, very, very interactive on that site. We're starting to be more interactive on the Instagram site, Facebook page, and get to the asylum.
That's right, folks. So get to the asylum, and we will see you next week.